What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host, he's Thomas Drance. He covers the Canucks for The Athletic. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big Friday show today. We're going to chat. We'll go out to Abbotsford. We'll chat with Ben Lipka, reporter for the Abbotsford News, who's been all over the Abbey Canucks Calder Cup run, which, of course, notched another successful night last night, and they are now one win away from winning the Calder Cup. We'll chat with Ben about that at one, and Dimitri joins us in his usual time slot 1:30 to wrap up the week here. Of course, Dimitri Filipovich from the Hockey PDO Cast joining us on the show. Drance, what's going on, man?
Hey, buddy, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know what? It's been a week.
Great, eh?
It's been a week. You know why I'm doing great? Because that was the cleanest, best throw to you that we've done this week, yeah. And you sound the best too.
Let's go.
It took us a week, but we're back in rhythm
with the video.
Yes, that's right.
Now that we've lowered our sights to doing radio only.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's great about that also, and I don't know if the listeners realize this, but going without video, and not that you can't stream our show, but we record it all. So in case there's a, you know, just a dynamite moment of radio, and we want to put it online as a video. Without video, we can't do that, which means you and I are really free just to let the hot takes fly, because it's not going to live. It's going to be ephemeral, right? It's not going to go out to social media as a out of context video that we're worried about. That's going to like break containment and get people mad at us. So without video, really, it amps up. We're able to just say whatever we want now on today's show. It's very exciting.
Love that for me.
Yeah. You can go in on Maple Leafs fans again, and you don't have to worry about it getting clipped.
Just their treatment of Mitch Marner and overall way of conducting themselves.
Yeah. Just the very core of them as human beings, really. That's all I was saying. Come on. 650, as mentioned, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And look, we're going to chat with Ben Lipka later in the show. I mean, we got to start, though, obviously, with the story out in Abbotsford last night. The Abbotsford Canucks, one win away from winning the AHL championship, the Calder Cup. They beat Charlotte 3-2 last night to take a 3-1 series lead. And because it's the 2-3-2 format, they got these three home games in a row. They will have a chance to clinch on Saturday at the Abbotsford Center. If they can get it done, they will take the series without even having to go back to Charlotte for potential game 6 and 7. And last night, the story, I mean, the big story is their one win away. The story zooming in on last night, Jonathan Lekker-Mäki in his second game back in the lineup in this series.
Go.
Scores twice, including the eventual game winner that made it 3-0 at the time. And it's just it's a big moment for Lekker-Mäki as an individual, I think, going into the summer to have this on what has been largely a very positive season, first season in North America for him, but seemed to be kind of ending on something of a down note individually. I think to have this kind of punctuation mark right at the very end, or almost at the very, very end of your season, you know, as long as the season could possibly go for him, I think that's a big deal. And, you know, I thought it was very telling what Manny Malhotra had to say after the game, right? About, hey, that's Lucky, right? He's got ice in his veins in those moments. He got his looks and he finished. And that has got to feel great for Lekker-Mäki. And I think the Canucks organization has to be thrilled for him turning in a performance like this at this time of year as well.
Yeah, and you know what? More than anything, it just eliminates any chance, that conversation that I've been kind of pushing back on and annoyed by, like, almost preemptively. I've been, like, defensive about it, even though I don't feel like it's been that frequent a talking point locally. The idea that, like, well, Lekker-Mäki's not the type of player that can get it done at this time of year. And it's like, no, he's just a physically underdeveloped 20-year-old who's played more games at a higher level than he ever has previously in his career and hit something of a wall.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. And so I sort of look at this and think to myself, I'm glad that we can put that to rest. This is now Jonathan Lekker-Mäki, big game player.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't change the fact that he did hit a wall, right? That he did struggle in the playoffs, right? He had a dominant 40 games in the American League earlier in the season, which is a testament to his upside and potential, right? He flashed on occasion at the NHL level. And I think it's fair to say over the course of a long year, sort of wore down. And that speaks to the physical development, purely physical, that he still has to go through if he's going to be, you know, a tough minutes, top of the lineup goal scorer at the NHL level. There's a lot to like about the season that he's had. There's a lot to like about the trajectory here. I don't think we should be penciling him in as a Brock Besser replacement.
No.
I don't think that's fair to him. And I think there's going to be a need to put on some weight, add a step or two as a skater, and then, you know, some hockey stuff too in terms of fleshing out his awareness beyond just attacking downhill, which he's exceptional at, especially at 5-on-5, right? On the power play, it's like the East-West game in stationary attacking situations. You can see the polish. There's even some nuance there, a precocious nuance, well above what you'd expect for a 20-year-old. Even at the NHL level, that shines through. But yeah, in terms of like participating in the buildup, protecting pucks down low below the hash marks, that side of the game, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done here.
Drench, yeah. You're telling me that a really like offensively talented, exciting forward prospect is really good at attacking in space off the rush and on the power play, but still needs to learn some of the nuances elsewhere? Like, what?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
That is absolutely... You mean like literally every attacking forward comes into the NHL, the same strengths and weaknesses and things that they need to work on? It's like, yeah, that's part of the process. That's how it goes.
Yeah, I'm saying a little more than that, though, right? Like the needs to add some strength and needs to add a step,
sure,
right? Needs to improve his strength in skating. You're right. That is fully normal. That is fully within the range of what you'd expect for a 20-year-old. But this comes back to like the Cy Young scoring profile that Kermacki had in his draft year too, right? Like there are sort of different limitations, I think, for him as like a creative East-West player, as opposed to just a downhill attacker that I think are like distinct to him and realer than just like, this is what you'd expect from a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
Right? So I do want to distinguish that one from the other ones. But yeah, I mean, look, great season from him. Now he's got an exclamation mark on it. And I think this performance alone is enough that, you know, how he performed in the playoffs won't be something we have to focus on.
Yes.
Beyond being maybe some signal that, like, yeah, he's got some physical development road to run here. And I think it's fair to suggest, like, maybe he wore down a little bit over the course of a long season, but it's not about getting it done at the tough time of year. It's not about him being a player type that can't succeed in the playoffs. That stuff, that conversation should be gone. Put in the dustbin where, frankly, it should have been the entire time.
I also don't think you have to like really put on your rose-colored glasses to take the he wore down thing, which is just pretty obviously true and understandable for a lot of reasons, and think like not even just that it's like an understandable negative, but it's like that could easily be a really great learning experience for him. You know what I mean? To like go through the rigors of a long season in North American hockey, ending with a very, you know, physical, intense playoff series at the end of it, and kind of understand the implications for that. And okay, hey, now I really understand what I need to do and what level I need to get to kind of stand up and make sure I'm not hitting that wall in future years. Like, I don't think that's I don't think that takes a ton of spin to kind of look at it as at least something that could go that way, right? That could actually be a positive for him, a big positive for him in his development down the road, even if, you know, it led to some healthy scratches and some underperformance in the playoffs this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, to be expected. Look, they're now one game away too, Jamie, right? I mean, as much as we're happy to see this for Lekarimäki and we get another unbelievable Artur Shelov's game, I mean, the Canucks have never had an American League affiliate win a championship.
Yep.
Like, never. I mean, go back to the days of the Fredericton Express or the Kansas City, whatever they were called, or the Manitoba Moose, the Chicago Wolves, the Utica Comets. The Canucks have made the, you know, American League final, or their affiliate has, you know, kind of like once every decade.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's been like a once every 10-year occurrence across the last 30 years or so, but I mean, this would be sort of the first championship the organization's won at either the NHL or the top minor league level in, you know, 55 years. I mean, that's unbelievable. You know, like, unbelievable.
Yep.
This matters. Like, this really matters. It matters in the Valley, matters in terms of the business case for having an American League team in the Valley, which has not always been the strongest, right? Both before Abbotsford came in and occasionally, like, during this season, we've seen that team play in front of 2,500 people, 2,500 people or what have you. And then you see the scenes last night, you know? And that matters, right? Like, that's how you build generational fan bases and fan loyalty. And that's how you fill a building in December when you're playing a game against, I don't know, Syracuse, right? And there's no NHL first round picks in the lineup, right? Mm-hmm. Like, these memories matter. In terms of that market, it matters to achieve something as an organization. It matters that the club nailed it when they hired Manny Malhotra and took a big risk naming a first-time professional head coach, to be the head of their American League affiliate last summer. It justifies that, and it justifies that, which seems especially weighty given that they've kind of made a similar gamble at the NHL level this summer naming Adam Foote behind the bench. Like, it's signal that there's some things going right. And for an organization that, you know, over the course of this offseason has had Rick Tocchet depart, which really felt like an insider selling their stock, you know, in terms of what it meant for public confidence, right? And then you had, like, the long, drawn-out Volander thing, you know? We kept talking about, like, would be great if the Canucks could have some American League success, could get Volander done fast, could keep Rick Tocchet. Like, that would really help. And hey, one of three, but also, this isn't just a long run. Now, this is a team on the precipice of winning a championship in a league where it's really difficult to do, like really, really difficult to do. And where a lot of the previous winners, have sort of foreshadowed something, not always like meteoric success at the NHL level, but something of consequence at the NHL level going forward, right? I mean, Hershey won the back-to-back ones, and it was like McMichael and Protas and all these guys that powered the Caps to, you know, a President's Trophy level this past season. You go further back, like, most of these teams that win, there's something of consequence that emerges from it at the NHL level. So this is a really exciting accomplishment to be on the verge of actually securing. And man, what a great night it's going to be out in Abbotsford when they play game five.
Yeah, the scenes there are absolutely incredible. And that kind of angle, the business case, the fan reaction, I do want to chat more about that with Ben Lipka when he joins us later from the Abbotsford News, because I think that's a big part of this story, right? And we've covered the hockey side of it a lot, and we will continue to do that. But that idea of, hey, not only are they going to potentially win, or they're on the verge of winning their first championship as an organization, but it's happening with the farm team right in their backyard that just recently, and only what, four seasons ago, relocated to down the road in Abbotsford. I think that's a big deal for the fans out there and for the organization as a whole. Should also mention Arshdeep Bains staying hot for Abby. He scored the other goal. Of course, Lekkomäki with two, Baines with one, and another really solid performance from Artur Shilovs in net as well. Okay, I do want to talk some NHL stuff with right now about the Vancouver Canucks, and not so much. I mean, we've spent so much time talking about who they could go out and acquire from outside the organization to bring in and bolster their forward group and try to change the mix. And, you know, this is, I feel like this is of a piece with the conversation we were having yesterday on the show on the back of your notebook at The Athletic about, at the very least, contingency plans starting to come into focus for the Canucks if the prices simply are too high to really be aggressive and go out and bring in those needle-moving forwards. And so to that point, on 32 Thoughts today, Elliot Friedman did one of his classic, you know, I wonder if the Canucks are going to try to extend Connor Garland, which, again, doesn't take a lot of reading between the lines to suggest that maybe he's heard something about that. And Rick Dolly, while reporting on Donnie and Dolly today, that, yeah, he expects the Canucks to be aggressive trying to re-sign Connor Garland, who is eligible for an extension on July 1st. Has 1 year left on his deal, but is eligible to sign an extension on July 1st. Dolly, while also reporting that the Canucks have recently, quote, reconnected with Pius Suter and his camp, who is, of course, due to become an unrestricted free agent on July 1st. I think it's very interesting, especially the Pius Suter part of this. We can get to Connor Garland and what an extension would look like, how far they would have to go, all of those things, the fit. But the Pius Suter one, I know I was thinking a lot, and I brought this up a little bit on the show yesterday, about the idea of, okay, maybe the really splashy, high-profile, high-end, high-upside piece in the top six isn't going to materialize. Not from lack of trying, but just because it's not out there. And if it is out there, we're probably going to get outbid anyways, okay? So we're going to pivot to Elias Pettersson, number one center, Filip Hedl, number two center, and we're going to work around that, and we're going to figure out a way to support what that looks like. And I keep coming back to, in that scenario, I think Pius Suter makes tons of sense. One, because you're not going out and necessarily committing cap space to somebody like a Marco Rossi, right? Or a Matt Duchene, who's off the market now. So you have a little bit more flexibility to sign Pugh Suter. But I also think that's a scenario where his versatility becomes even more important, right? Because are you 100% positive you want Filipito locked in as your number two center? Even if you are, he's got injury issues, right? You don't know if you're going to get 82 games out of Filipito. You don't know what you're going to do with the rest of your center depth. I think in that scenario, having somebody with the versatility of Pugh Suter makes all the sense in the world. And I also wonder if that would reflect a bit of a change from going from desperately trying to raise the ceiling of the team to saying, well, if that's not possible, let's try to raise the floor as much as we can. Because Pugh Suter feels like one of the best like floor raisers who's going to be available on the open market this summer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but what's the benefit to the Canucks of raising their floor at this point?
Well, if you can't raise the ceiling, it's plan B, right? That's it.
Isn't that it? I don't know. I mean,
What does
a high floor get you, Jamie?
Look, man, hey, you're preaching to the choir here, all right? But I'll lay out the case for you, okay? So you can't go get whatever, you know, guy with point of game upside who you're really excited about long term to be your second line center or your top line winger, okay? Let's say that's going to be off the table. Now, who knows? Marco Rossi could still happen, something like that. I'm still very curious about Marco Rossi. But let's say that's not going to happen. And you look at what you have in-house, and you feel really good about your blue line. Not perfect, but you feel good about your blue line. You've got depth coming in the pipeline. If you get Demko done in an extension, you feel really good about your goaltending situation, right? So you can already see the shape of the identity coming into focus for your team, how you're going to play. You're going to rely on your defense. You're going to rely on your blue line. You got a superstar in the blue line in Quinn Hughes. You're betting on a Pettersson bounce back. And I think, again, if you can't do the ceiling raising moves, it does make a certain amount of sense to lean into that defensive identity and say, okay, we're just going to have a lot of depth. We're going to have smart hockey players, good defensive hockey players, reliable guys up and down the lineup. Adam Foote, we think, is going to be able to have that same kind of defensive structure in place that Rick Tocchet was able to. And look, it's not pretty and it's not our first choice, but we're going to go with that. And we think we can punch above our weight if that's the case. And look, again, I'm not saying this is my favorite outcome. It's definitely not.
No, it's a bad outcome.
But if you're
it's going, a bad outcome.
But
no, it's
but
a bad outcome.
But is it out of it? Do you so? Okay, it's a bad outcome. But do you think that means it's not on the table? Because I think it absolutely is.
I think it probably is on the table to some extent. If Dhaliwal's reporting it, I trust his information. Now, I also can tell you, like, as of yesterday, and granted Dhaliwal's reporting that things changed, but as of yesterday, the Canucks' internal expectation was Suter and Besser are more likely than not to make it to July 1 at this point. Obviously, that was qualified with the things can change in one phone call, and Dhaliwal's reporting that things may be changing with one phone call.
At least one phone call.
Okay, so here's the problem, man. Here's the problem. What do you need to accomplish to actually meet the big picture goal that we know stands out for the organization across the next, let's say, 375 days?
Sure. Right?
A full year plus 10 days. What do you actually need to occur?
To phrase it in the most like big picture way, you need to convince Quinn Hughes that he has a chance to win here if he signs long term. That's what I would say. Right? Is that fair?
I agree.
Yeah.
That's where I was trying to lead you to.
Okay.
Do we believe that making the postseason with 98 points and, let's say, at least keeping it close or winning a round and, you know, like, I guess those are pretty different outcomes. Let's say at least making the playoffs. Do we think that's sufficient?
Probably not. No, I wouldn't think so.
Okay. But a floor raise. So raising the floor helps you achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
But raising the ceiling requires a lot more. And if you spend $4.5 million on Pugh Suter to raise your floor, by the way, I think Pugh Suter is a totally fine bet at $4.5 million. I don't need to tell our listeners how I feel about this player,
yes.
Right? Like, I think he's perfectly fine value there. I think he can help you win games. I think he can help a really good team win games in the hardest games of the season. I think he'd be additive to the Florida Panthers. I think he'd be additive to the Edmonton Oilers. I think he has a spot in the top nine on every single team in hockey. And, you know, part of his value is that spot can literally be anywhere in the lineup. But in Vancouver, if you're spending $4.5 million to raise your floor, that's $4.5 million fewer cap resources that you have to swing for the fences. And you need to connect on some home runs, and Pugh Suter is a single, right? Like, this is not what they need in this situation. This is not sufficient to, like, meet their the high-leverage short-term goal that this organization is and should be prioritizing across the next 375 days, period, right? Like, that's it. And so I just think it does not make sense to limit your weaponry doing what needs to be done in order to do something that's good enough, right? Like, I'd rather see them overpay to, you know, gamble on even some, like, Podkolzin tier bets from other teams, right? Like, I'd rather see that just given what this team needs to achieve if they're going to actually meet their long-term goal. And I'd add this. There were multiple times over the last 12 months, right, where you probably are able to get Pugh Suter done at, like, four times $3.5 million, including as recently as, like, right before the trade deadline. And they declined to do it. Now, they declined to do it in part because they thought Pugh Suter's preference would be to stay. And maybe that's the bluff they're about to call. But we're still talking about, you know, an extra million against the cap per year, plus the risk they've taken on by letting it get to this point. So once you factor in sort of the fact that this takes other options off the table in terms of swinging on higher upside bets, right? And the opportunity cost of managing it the way they have to this point and then pivoting as a last resort, I think we can look at it and just say, that's bad. That's not how I want to see this team operate, even with their short-term goals in mind. Like, that's not it. It's not it. And I don't like it. I don't think it makes sense for how this team should conduct their business across the next 2 weeks. And I don't think it makes sense in terms of how I think this organization should conduct their business in the big picture. I think it's like a very, it would actually be a very concerning process indicator for me.
So
more than anything else.
I think, you know, back to the trade deadline, I was very much on team trade Besser and trade Suter. If you're not going to re-sign them, trade these guys. Cause I agree. Like, I largely agree with what you're laying out there, right? Key open up the cap space so you can take some swings rather than lock into, you know, the guys that, You were unsatisfied with the team. The team lacked offensive punch, right? So don't just roll it back with those two UFAs. Get something for them and then see what you can do with those assets in that cap space on July 1st. I'm just reading the tea leaves here, man. Like, I'm not advocating for this position. And I also wonder, like, we're arguing about bad options here, ultimately, is what it comes down to. You know what I mean? Like, there's a dream option where 25-year-old second-line center with first-line upside X becomes available, and somehow the Canucks are able to win the bidding, and we all agree that's the best outcome. That would be amazing. We're also, I think, increasingly coming to the understanding that that player is probably not materializing. Or if they do, it's Marco Rossi, and there's legitimate fit concerns about him behind Elias Pettersson as your second-line center. Once you get past that, like, theoretical perfect option, all of the other options are going to make your stomach turn a little bit, right? Like, I get what you're saying about, okay, make some of those Podkolzin types, but or Podkolzin type bets, you know, former first round picks who haven't found a home, all of that. Can you do that in bulk? I get the logic of that, but I also think if you bring it back, not just to, okay, we want to capture the most upside, but we're doing this as part of a pitch to Quinn Hughes. Like, is that moving the needle for Quinn Hughes? I don't know if it is either.
Yeah, I mean, I just think you need to be decisive organizationally. If you've decided months ago that retaining Pugh Suter at a certain price point didn't make sense for you, if you felt confident in your ability to replace him, and you have to abandon that plan entirely and, in fact, completely reverse course because a 34-year-old signs with their current team rather than hitting the market, like, that should cause you to take a beat and ask a different question.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't make sense.
I get it.
That doesn't make sense, man. I'm sorry. It just doesn't.
But
No. You can't just suggest, like, hey, I get it. Jumping off of a cliff is a bad idea. But in this context, it's like, no.
Well, what if there's
no. This whole thing is bad.
A big, deep pool of water right below it where you're jumping off. No. People do that for fun.
And look, restarting talks, having conversations, like, I think the Pew Suter market's going to be pretty decent. I think there's a lot of teams that are going to value his versatility. And so we'll see. Like, just because they've re-engaged on a player who does like living here doesn't necessarily mean it even gets done.
Nope.
Right? Or doesn't mean, like, maybe they're like, okay, look, we're still not going to X dollar amount, but maybe we add a year of term. Would that bring us close enough? And so, you know, maybe there's ways of doing this without them completely reversing course on where negotiations have stalled out across multiple months. But I don't think, like, I think if you are abandoning a long-held decision and negotiating stance off of a decision from a 34-year-old to re-sign and not test the market, I think that's, like, that's an alarm bell. That's an alarm bell that needs to result in an organization not changing course and going back on, again, a previously discussed decision that everyone was on the same page on, but to take a beat and have a different conversation and ask a different series of questions about what exactly we're doing here.
So we got to go to break, but, like, don't what you just laid out, like, we're all going to need to take a step back and ask some different questions. Don't you think that's a possible outcome of the next couple of weeks here? Right? I mean, we're already hearing, like, hey, they might be interested in Bowen Byram in case Quinn Hughes walks. Like, are we?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, are we going to have to start having that conversation a lot sooner rather than later?
I mean, we might. I'm not saying we're not going to. But I also would just say, let's make sure to get into, remember the old habit of not overreacting to deals that haven't occurred yet?
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, at the same time that we're getting these breathless reports about the Canucks offering, you know, trades to the Minnesota Wild for Marco Rossi that the Minnesota Wild are declining, like, I'm hearing other things too, right? Like, I'm hearing, like, I don't know that they're that in. My understanding is it's been pretty lukewarm. So, you know, like, there's all sorts of different scuttlebutt. Like, Rick Dhaliwal's information, you can almost always take to the bank. I trust him with more than just, like, what our subject of conversation is. I wouldn't trust him with my life. I'm not going to go that far.
I
love the man.
Certainly
but
not.
That's a little... Yeah. I don't trust him with pronunciations, but I trust his intel. He's an excellent reporter and a good crossfire sparring partner. Or what do we call it?
Crossover.
Sparring partner. But, you know, like... Him saying the Canucks have at least called again, checked in, that doesn't mean this is a complete, you know, world turned upside down,
topsy-turvy,
change of direction from the Canucks. If it is, I think that's concerning, right? I don't have any reason to believe that it is. And I think it's really important that we not do the old, like, let's not get pre-mad. No pre-mad. No getting pre-mad these weeks as they get increasingly speculative and pressure-filled, right? This is, like, the rule that applies to the week before the deadline, Jamie, and the week before the free agent, like, or let's say the 10 days before the free agent.
But this is the best time to get pre-mad.
I know.
What? It's like, have you ever noticed you're driving?
Well, we've, like, well blown over our thing. Like, we could have filled a full 2 hours debating Pew Suter and whether or not they should circle back on him. Whether they even are is still being contested.
Have you ever noticed that you're driving and you see a no U-turn sign and you're like, wow, this would be a really convenient place to do a U-turn. You know what I mean? It's like they only put the sign up where it would be so great to do a U-turn. It's like letting you know, like, hey, by the way, lots of people have done a U-turn here because it's super convenient. And it's like, this is like the pre-mad rule. It's like, but this is the best time to get pre-mad. Why do you have to rule against it now? Anyways, all right, we got to take a break here. We went long. We can get into lots more off-season speculation, news around the league in the next season, in the next segment, I should say. By the way, never too early to get your Vancouver Giants season's tickets. Tickets start at under $19. At VancouverGiants.com/seasons tickets, /season tickets, I should say. We're back for another segment of Canucks Talk next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trantz. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And going into the inbox, lots of reaction to the conversation we were having in the first segment of the show. Tim texts in. Drance is 100% right, but I also feel it's important to add there are two major factors in the Hughes staying decision. One, EP40, and I'm guessing Tim means an EP40 bounce back would go a long way. And two, and he says, and likely most important, a drama-free season. And I think that's it's a good shout, but it's also like that's the baseline. The baseline is to have a drama-free professional, like, quietly successful season. You know what I mean? But that's not, like, convincing Quinn Hughes to stay. That's just the prerequisite you have to meet.
Is Tim new here?
To even be in the conversation.
Tim, are you new here? This is the Vancouver... This is Canucks talk. We talk about the Vancouver Canucks.
And the Abbotsford Canucks.
And the Abbotsford... Well, all things Canucks.
Yeah, that's right.
If there was another Canucks, we would talk about them, too.
We'd be all in.
In fact, we'd have to, based on the name of our program.
That'd be a good bit, actually. It's just a completely unrelated Canucks entity. Like, well, time for the update. Here we go. I get what he's saying about the drama-free thing, but again, it's just like, that's not getting you extra points. You know what I mean? That's like going to Quinn Hughes and being like, hey, we were drama-free this year. Don't you want to stay? It would be like you're in high school and you're trying to, like, you know, convince your parents you did really well at school. And you're like, hey, I attended 80% of my classes. And it's like, okay, but that's not what we're talking about. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go to school every day. We're looking for the above and beyond stuff. And I feel like that's where we're at with Quinn Hughes here.
In fact, bragging about having a drama-free season is kind of telling on yourself.
Yes, it absolutely is.
You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, shouldn't every season be like that? Like, why isn't it?
Yeah, it's like if the accident-free since whenever days sign is like, it's like way too low a number. And you're like, uh-oh, what happened? What happened 59 days ago?
We better get it together.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, 100%. Yeah,
I like drama-free as a goal, but that's very much the baseline goal. Then you got to hit some stretch goals on top of that. Okay, 650, keep sending those texts in. Now, I did want to just run through quickly some of the transactions, deals that have happened around the league in the last 24 hours or so. A couple involving the Dallas Stars in different capacities. And of course, they signed Matt Duchene to the 4-year extension. We knew there were going to be other dominoes to follow for them from that. The first one was... not a shocking move here. They traded forward Mason Marchment, who had 1 year left on his deal, to Seattle for a pair of mid-round draft picks. And I have seen a lot of people reacting, oh, why weren't the Canucks in on that? How, you know, that would have been a perfect fit. Well, I believe Marchment had a 10-team no-trade list. No idea if the Canucks were on it, but he did have some control over that. And you've also seen reports that Jim Nill made a point of sending him to another tax-free state, right? So he wouldn't take a hit on his earnings or anything like that. So it's entirely possible the Canucks were in on it, or at least that they made calls, but that there wasn't a fit for a variety of reasons. But one potential target on the trade market, Mason Marchment, ends up in Seattle. Also, news out of Dallas today, they signed center Maverick Bork, who was an RFA, to a 1-year deal worth just $950,000. So not even really a bridge, just a 1-year deal for Maverick Bork. And that was a popular trade target, potentially popular offer sheet target. But he takes the very, very short term, low salary contract. And I guess we'll see if he can get a bigger role in Dallas next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a big one for them to wrap up, right?
Yep.
So they get out of jail free with a prominent offer sheet target, and they get out of jail free sending Marchment to Dallas, a deal that I think a lot of Canucks fans would have loved to see Vancouver be in on.
Mm-hmm.
Not clear whether or not they ever could have been anyway. But yeah, I mean, sure. Look, good work from Jim Nill, because he had a straitjacket on, and now he's out, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's not ace. There's still some crunchy stuff that they're going to have to work through. Dumba buyout feels inevitable, right? A Labushkin trade, finding a way to go cheap. Like, what they need is their version of the Sergachev trade to Utah.
Right.
That's what they really need to find here, where you send a good player to another team for, like, multiple NHL-ready ELC guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's sort of the deal I feel like they need to find here. And
so who would the good player be in this case? Jason Robertson?
Well, it sounds like they explored that one, right?
Yeah, they were at least looking at it. Yeah.
So, like, Robertson, but you know, again, it's the package where, like, they get JJ Moser and they get Geeky and they get a draft pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, similar value to the Renton deal, where you get basically the equivalent of, like, 3 first round picks, but with more player assets involved in that sort of deal, right? Like, that's kind of the sort of thing they need to look for, I think. And, you know, we'll also see, like, a lot of these cap projections that have the Stars pressed up against it or what have you, right? I feel like are relying on, you know, we don't really have complete information on, for example, like Tyler Seguin's health.
Right.
You know what I mean? But we know everything he's been through to play. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be stunned if we learn more about exactly what his status is, right? So, you know, just add not like a hard $9.85 million to Dallas's cap sheet when you think about what their options are, but add the possibility of it into your sort of consideration set when you think about what sort of that team's looking for. I still think they do need that sort of established player for, you know, a bunch of young contributors or ELC contributors, ideally, type deal. I still think that has to be front of mind for them.
I do think getting Bork done early and a really small number is a big deal for them.
But also... kind of sucks.
Well, it sets up the tougher negotiations down the road, of course. But that's the bargain they made. That's the bargain they obviously made here.
100%. And they're good enough to make it.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is the profile where you want because he's just coming out of ZLC, but like 6 times 2.5, right? Like there is a cost to doing it this way, just like there was a cost to bridging Jason Robertson, right? I mean, imagine Jason Robertson with term now, you know, at $9 million, and how we'd all be looking about at that deal now, right? And even if Dallas isn't completely convinced that he's the guy for them, imagine what his trade value would be with no trade. And he's still not eligible for trade protection. If you were talking about Jason Robertson for $9 million in this cap environment with 5 more years of security attached, right? I mean, yeah, that's a cost. That's a cost that they've incurred. Like, these bridge deals need to be done. And this is something that I want to pivot to in talking about Connor Garland and the reports about the Canucks considering an extension on Garland. Obviously you should be considering an extension on Garland.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the terrifying truth, Jamie. I think you should be extending everybody you can. I think every team should basically be like, we should just extend anyone who's eligible to extend now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get it done now before the market goes completely bonkers and the logic of what a cap growth and consistent cap growth NHL looks like filters through the league and filters down through every single player contract. We're already seeing some of it. That Zetterlin valuation in Ottawa, the Frederick value. But this is just the start. Like, this is like, oh, there's a trickle coming. Do you think there might be a flood? And it's like, yeah, you're going to be up to your knees in 6 months. And then you're going to be needing a snorkel in 18. So do it while everyone can just see a trickle. You know, like,
but I think so.
This is it.
I think you're right that teams are starting to clue into that, and we're also seeing the early effects of it. But I also think we're also seeing teams react to it and say, yeah, we got to be proactive about extending our own guys, right? Like, how many UFAs are even going to make it to July 1st at this rate? You know, I mean, we've already got all the Florida guys are like, yeah, Bill Zito, I desperately want to be here. You tell me, Bill, and I'll sign for whatever you want, basically. Like, that's not quite, but right. Like, they are making their intentions known that they want to be there. And you just, like, every day now, it's like Ryan Donato, 4 years in Chicago. Eric Robinson, 4 years in Carolina. Matt Duchene, 4 years in Dallas, right? Brock Nelson signed. Like, it's going to be like Nick Ehlers, Mitch Marner. How far down the list are you going to have to go? Like, Brock Besser is going to hit. But, like, I think already you're seeing teams look around and say, the trade market is so tough because everyone wants to get better. The UFA market is going to be hyper-competitive. We have to re-sign our own guys because we just, like, the downside of waiting and seeing what's out there is so significant, and the prices could get so out of control as well. And I think you're going to see that continue over the next 10 days here. Like, a lot of pending UFAs, I think, are going to get signed.
Meanwhile, you're bowling with, like, the ropes on the gutters in terms of signing your own guys.
Yeah.
Right? Like a few years ago, you sign a guy and it was like, that better work out or he's going to have no trade value and you're going to be stuck with it forever and you're never going to be able to compete. Like, you're going to have to be mining three star players from the same draft class to undo the mess you've created with that stupid contract. Right? Yeah. Like, those were the stakes of all these player contracts 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Right? And now everyone's tradable. Because everyone wants players. You know, here's a guy who you could see it on. Ilya Mikheyev, right? It was like, wow, I can't believe the Canucks were able to get out so painlessly of that contract. That wasn't that long ago.
Nope.
And there is no world in which Mikheyev's value is not significant. Now, he played well, but we kind of knew that he would a year removed from the ACL surgery. That's not like outside our realm, like, that's not outside what we would have reasonably expected, right? And they're going to be able to, if Chicago, and they might not even want to, he might be more valuable to them than whatever he can return. But his value is way higher today than it was when the Canucks dealt him, right? You would be in a way better position having done proactive deals with Suter and Besser than you are today with them walking away, just because it would be more talent that you control, right? Talent ahead of cap space. We have to really train ourselves to think about it differently. So even if Connor Garland's like a high $6 million valuation on a deal with significant term, who cares, right? Connor Garland's good. Good players are going to have a market. Good players that play tough and are going to have a market, regardless of how tall they are, right? Getting Connor Garland done is just more talent that you control, right? And that's what you need. You need to find as much of it, mine as much of it as you can from every possible source, and then lock it up so that you have a say. And that's the game now. That's the game now. It's a recruiting game. It's not an efficiency game. And so be a glutton, right? Garland, Demko, you're XYZ guys eligible for an extension, and they're a like credible NHL player who can play top nine or better. Good. Get it done. Get it done as fast as you can before the market resets, because there's going to be a huge first mover's advantage that teams that act quickly and decisively accrue. And the other side of that coin is that kicking anything down the line is going to have a real cost and an increasingly steeper cost in a world where the market is resetting and changing and evolving this quickly and this competitively.
So just to run through extension eligible guys on the Canucks: Connor Garland, Kiefer Sherwood also, at forward, Teddy Bluger's going into the last year of his deal. Thatcher Demko, of course, is the other big one. Linus Karlsson, by the way, 1 year left on his deal. So if you think there's something there, I'm not saying super long term or anything, but that could be an interesting one to explore as well. Liam and hold on the Garland thing as well. I do think there's value to, because he can't sign the extension yet, but he can in 10 days. And so maybe they're negotiating with him right now. I think there's value to like doing the legwork now and having it ready to go when it opens on July 1st, when he's officially eligible, like before a wave of UFA contracts comes in and changes the comps.
Heck yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, don't wait and say, we'll touch base on July 5th after we've taken care of free agency, and we'll do it then, because the market could have changed just in that time frame. If there's middle ground to be found and he's willing to talk ball and he's willing to hammer out the legwork, I think you go and you do as much as you can before July 1st and then try to get pen to paper as soon as possible when he's officially eligible. Liam in Calgary texts in, this is why I think the Canucks will circle back to Besser closer to July 1st and give him term. We are running out of options. Everything we're hearing is that Brock Besser is going to test free agency on July 1st. I know Elliot Friedman had the update today. I know Rick Dhaliwal has been saying that. Yeah, one phone call caveat, that applies, of course. It just feels like if they were going to have that realization and come to that conclusion, it would have happened a long time ago. And I don't know at this point what you would have to offer to get Brock Besser to forego his first chance at unrestricted free agency. I get what the texter is saying. If you're scared about the other options, and look, the logic we were just laying out, like, there's not going to be a lot out there. What are we going to be able to do? That certainly applies in this situation. It just feels like the relationship and where things stand, the leverage between the two sides is such that Brock Besser is going to at the very least, listen hard to some offers on July 1st.
Yeah, and I thought Friedman noted something that I heard as well, which was, Yeah, you know, Besser and a lot of other players are going to be sifting through this continuum where there's a tension between what it takes if you want to choose your destination, if you want to compete, if you want to be with a really good team, and what you can get from a team where you're sort of mercenarying it and hunting for the money.
Yeah.
And so then the sort of player evaluation, like the player decision tree here, sort of focuses in or becomes more about, like, placing the right bet on teams, which is fun too, right? Like, how can I have my money and end up in a more competitive situation than people realize in a couple of years? Like, that's what you're now looking for, right? If you're a player, how can I have my cake and eat it too? Which team is going to pull out of the skid fastest, right? And so that also becomes part of the player recruitment process, right? There's a continuum. There's going to be, and this is true in the NFL too, where we've seen steady cap growth, and there is what you know, in that league anyway, and far more decisive than state taxes, by the way, is the bad team tax.
Yep.
Right? The undesirable market tax that you have to pay. And if you're going to land players as a less desirable organization, if you're going to have to pay the bad team tax, it looks one way, right? And if you're a team that's close enough to be like, yeah, you know what? Maybe they didn't make the Final Four this year or even the playoffs, but I can see the path, that might be a different price. That might be the sweet spot price. And then there's the Chicago price, and the Chicago price is going to be, you know, loaded with stupid tax costs, and or not stupid tax, bad team tax costs, and stupid tax also applies. And so that's sort of where we're going to land here in terms of what players are sifting through and making decisions based off of. And I thought Friedman's sort of explanation of that from Besser's perspective is fascinating as sort of the new world, the new reality too, for unrestricted free agents, especially like really good ones, guys where it's not just like, oh, there's only four teams anyway that can afford me. I just have to make my mind up based off of those teams. It's like, no, there's a whole variety of different suitors and situations for you to decide between, and you get to wait what you care most about within that sort of set of considerations.
Yeah, and I just think the presence of Chicago, Anaheim, San Jose, the teams desperate to get better with tons of cap space, it's such a nice cushion to have if you're a player in Brock Besser's situation, right? Not that all of those teams would be major bidders for him, but it's almost like the team of last resort. You know what I mean? If you're not getting exactly what you want, or the, you know, the contending teams don't have quite enough space, aren't willing to go long term with you, it's like those teams are so desperate, and just as you said, desperate just to get meetings with people, like desperate for somebody to take their money. I think that's a pretty good backstop to kind of have as you go into unrestricted free agency if you're in a position like Brock Besser is. Ben Lipka from the Abbotsford News is going to join us on the other side. We'll keep talking Calder Cup Finals with Ben. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at rogers.com. Ben Lipka next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.